most importantly, what are you consistent with? Because you can find just as many things to repurpose with, but it's more about what do you know you'd be confident with, what do you know would be good quality, and what will you be consistent enough with to stick to it in order to build an engaged audience, consistently putting something out very, very regularly.
Welcome to Between Two Mics.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Rock.
We're the co-founders of Squadcast.fm.
The best way to record remote interviews in studio quality like this one.
Here on Between Two Mics, we explore the challenges, opportunities, and new ideas with the people who are pushing the limits of what's possible in podcasting. Amy Woods is the founder of Content 10X, a company on a mission to help creators repurpose their content and grow their shows. She has distilled her vast knowledge and wisdom on the topic of repurposing into a book with the same name, Content 10X. In this episode, we go deep on the topic of repurposing, exploring what forms of content creators can start with, how to think about efficiency within content marketing, and how the quality of your content is enhanced by repurposing the right way. Amy, welcome to Between Two Mics.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And we are excited today to explore the world of how we can get the most of our podcast content. And you are at the forefront there, really, really pushing it forward when it comes to starting with a podcast or some form of content. That's one of my questions for you, actually. But starting from some source content and then really kind of branching out and reaching your audience in all these different ways, which is your superpower. So really excited to explore that with you. But before we do jump into that, where did you kind of get started when it came to this idea of repurposing our content and really reaching new audiences that way?
I guess I could explain a little bit about the business. So when I started Content 10X, previous to that, way previous to that, I'd had a long corporate career as a management consultant. And then I started my own business where I was still in somewhat doing business consultancy, but I was trying to pivot more to online. So instead of working with a big corporate consultancy firm with the Fortune 500 companies, I was working with smaller businesses, and I was doing online consultations and online work and online courses and things like that. So I started embracing content marketing, and I was really bought into the whole idea of repurposing content, because I think my background as a management consultant, specifically in process improvement and change management, my brain automatically is drawn to something that makes a process efficient and like streamlines things and makes, you know, your work go further and things like that. So I was in that business. I was doing, I think at the time, let me think, I was doing something like a Facebook Live and then repurposing that into a video for YouTube and a blog post and social media content and things like that. And I had a team that was supporting me, different skill sets. So copywriter helping with copy, graphic designer helping with graphics, video editor helping with video. And so I kind of came up with the idea of, instead of somebody having to juggle lots of different skill sets through lots of different freelancers or hiring those skills into your business, it's an opportunity to just have one service provide, like outsourcing your content repurposing. So that's when I came up with the idea of the business. It was really just through doing it myself and learning more and more about how to do it, doing it myself. And then obviously as we started to work with other clients, even like learning so much more about how to repurpose content. But I think it, you know, really just drawn to the fact that there's a big problem out there, which is people have this feeling of that they're not creating enough content, or that they have to be everywhere all the time, and then really stressed about what would our next tweet about and what would my next Instagram post be about and things like that. And if you do embrace a longer form piece of content like a podcast or a video, then there's so much said in one podcast episode or one video that can then fuel all of that content. So you don't have to be stressed and worried about the next Insta post or tweet or things like that if you're finding ways to leverage the longer form content. So it's kind of, you know, just identifying that problem and finding a solution myself, and then trying to then provide that solution to other people, because I knew that so many people had that problem.
So I'm a big fan of the whole 10X brand. I mean, it really sticks out. You got big, bold colors. Anyone listening, go to content10x.com and see what I'm talking about. But like, where we first got acquainted with you was at one of the events. You had a booth and it shined. And of course, you know, you standing in front of it, it was memorable. Right. And so we were like, okay, we're paying attention to this lady and her business. And so that totally makes sense why, you know, with your background in management consulting. But there's a very creative and fun side to your brand. Where does that come from? Do you see yourself as a creator as well?
Well, I do, although it's definitely not my, you know, strongest skill. I'm a creative person, but I wouldn't call myself a designer or anything like that. I have all the ideas, but I'm more the kind of draw it on piece of paper and then pass it over to someone else to bring it to life. But yeah, I think I am creative. In the career that I had previously, it wasn't really any creative aspects to it. You know, it was very, very businessy, very corporate-y. But then I think when the reins came free and I started my own business, I knew that I could, you know, that now is an opportunity to do anything. So I remember when I first started coming up with the brand and thinking about what would everything be? What would the logo be? What would the look and feel be and things like that? I really liked the thought of like comic book and superhero, because the whole idea was we save the day, like we save the content day. So we have this little video on our homepage where somebody's just done a podcast episode and they have like the bat button thingy that they press when the bat sign goes off. Can't remember what it's called.
Oh, right.
What's it called? The bat that you press the, what does he press?
The bat signal?
The bat sign thing. Anyway, you press it.
Like the light in the sky?
Yeah. And then it goes up in the sky. And the podcaster finishes their episode and presses it. And then it shoots up in the sky and our logo shows instead of the bat sign. And then one of our content repurposing superheroes flies down and takes his podcast episode off him and takes it up to our HQ and then repurposes it into lots of content. So I think I've just had lots of fun being really, really creative. I've realized even more creative, how I can be even more creative than I thought I was. But I'm really just blessed to have a really good creative team as well. So I can come up with all sorts of ideas and then we'll bring it to life even more. But I'm really pleased that you said that it stood out and it kind of looks vibrant, because that's what we want, really. It reflects our brand. We're really, really creative, and we want people to feel that if we work for them, we'd be just as creative with them as we are with ourselves. And, you know, friendly, approachable, the whole superhero thing was all, you know, kind of designed to make us friendly, fun and approachable, really, are our core values. So it's cool to hear you say that.
Very cool. And it is, it's a beautiful thing to, and at least I feel this way. And it sounds like we see this similarly, like, being of service to creators is one of the most creative things you can do as we do with Squadcast, helping people with their essentially quality as a brand asset for them. You're actually making visuals and blog posts. So you have voice and, style guides and all of these different brand elements that that are preserved through the content repurposing 10x approach. And hearing you speak about it, and I had this sense before as well, but you just jogged my memory, like there's a real mindset shift here with the way that you help people get the most out of their content. And that's something that's probably not obvious when you're kind of looking at content marketing or just creating content and telling stories through podcasts or videos or any of these kind of source long form content strategies. You kind of start to wonder, like, how do I get into all these other channels? How do I? It's just vast, right? And also we our creative well is only so so deep or full at any point in time. So I love that that shift of mindset where it's we're actually creating a lot of ideas as we have a dialogue and record together or create some content, and it's really about kind of starting there as the trunk of the tree maybe, and then like branching out in all these different directions until you get to like the individual Instagram posts and different pieces of the content. So I think that's a relief, that's quite a lift of anxiety from the content creator that discovers your service. So incredibly valuable mindset shift in how you can get the most out of your content. My question is around different it seems like long form is a great place to start. Of course, we're biased and love podcasting as a place to start. But this mindset shift really does then beg the question, like, what's the most valuable place to start from to set myself up for success once I get to the branches and the leaves of this repurposing strategy? Once we hand it off to your team and you start to do your thing, how do you think about that? Like, is a podcast the best place to start because it's long form and because it's audio, you can transcribe that and start to kind of branch in these different directions? Is it video? If you were to, the reverse is another way to do this thought experiment, right? Where if you were to start with some kind of short form written piece of content, you can't necessarily turn that then into a tweet. You would have to into a podcast or something like that. You can't really, there's kind of a one direction you can travel here. So I know I'm being a little bit abstract here with my analogy of the tree, but what are your thoughts about kind of what's the best place to start?
Well, I think it really does depend on the creator, what the ultimate objectives are, what their audience is and things like that. So I feel like it's quite hard to give, a one size fits all answer. But I guess all things being equal, I would say that video is definitely a great place to start, because with video, you have so many other dimensions to it. Because with video, you have the audio. So, for many of the clients that we work with, if we have clients who are on our video 10X service, it's generally always repurposed into a podcast most of the time, not always, but so with video, you get audio. So you can repurpose the video into a podcast episode, and not necessarily saying that you take the just completely strip the video of audio and turn into a podcast episode, but it may be that you take certain sections of a video and top and tail it with other parts and other segments too and things like that. But video brings you audio. Video brings you a blog post, because you can write about the video too, write about what was talked about, etc. And then with video, you can create shorter snippets of social videos, so longer videos, and then turn them into a square video for Instagram and a vertical video for Instagram stories and videos for Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever. So more shorter extracted videos. And then you can create the tweets and all the other things that you can create as well. So I do think that video kind of sits up there, but I think it depends on, like I said, so many different things. So with audio, of course, you can create all the other things that I said before video. Audio can become a blog post. Audio can become audiograms, instead of video teasers, audiograms. Video can become lots of social media posts and content too. So you do have it all with either, but with video, you just have one step more as well. But I always say that I think it depends on, so when you're deciding between video and podcasts, as I'm sure when you're speaking to so many podcasters too, I think video, not everybody is confident on video. So it's all well and good saying video, but it can be very daunting putting yourself on camera. And I think a lot of people may feel more comfortable in a podcast as opposed to worrying about video aspects too, not just about being on camera, being confident on camera, maybe losing your confidence a little bit because you're not used to being recorded on camera, and worrying about your background. And I think as much as the tech can put people off podcasting or video, I think the tech can put people off video a bit more because there's that extra dimension. You have to get good audio quality and good video quality. So it's not for everybody. I think you need to know what you would be good at out of the two, what you would be confident at out of the two, what you would enjoy out of the two, what would therefore make you consistent out of the two, and what the format is as well. Like, is it guest interviews? Is it solo? That kind of thing as well. So I think it kind of comes down to a lot of the individual creator and what's right for them. And then either podcast or video works fine. And I think if the other option, of course, is longer form blog posts. I always find they're the trickiest to repurpose into as much content as podcast and video, because that really does take it down to a quite flat dimension when it's just words written. It's hard to turn a blog post into a video and into a podcast and things like that. And you can do it, of course. You can write the blog post first and then say you're doing a solo podcast episode, you could base a podcast episode, of course, on a blog post. Just base it on it, don't read the blog post out. And you could create a video based on a blog post. So you can kind of work up the tree as well as down the tree. But I think most importantly, what are you consistent with? Because you can find just as many things to repurpose with either, but it's more about what do you know you'll be confident with, what do you know would be good quality, and what will you be consistent enough with to stick to it in order to build an engaged audience, consistently putting something out very, very regularly.
So there's we attend a lot of conferences like you, Amy, and I think sometimes I forget like how much my mind was blown when I heard of the term repurposing and companies like you who specialize in doing that. But maybe for the podcasters that aren't or creators even that, you know, aren't familiar with repurposing, like why is it so important to look into having their content repurposed?
Well, there's lots of reasons, really. So I think, you know, firstly, it's about reaching as big an audience as you can. So I think it's important to remember that, you know, let's say you are a podcaster. Now, not everybody listens to podcasts. So what's the Edison research this year? I think regularly listens to podcasts, not kind of occasional one-off, was around 4 in 10 people that said that they do regularly listen to podcasts. So not everybody listens to podcasts. If you're doing only video content, not everybody watches videos. Not everybody will read blog posts. So we all have different ways that we consume content, different ways that we like to learn. So firstly, I think if you repurpose, you are just being able to share your message in different ways in order to connect with different people. And ultimately, perhaps as a podcaster, you would love for them to listen to your podcast, but perhaps you need to reach people on another medium first in order to convince them. Then you can convince them to start listening to your podcast and things like that, but you need to get in front of them first. So firstly, I think it's about that. I think it's about reaching people through connecting with them in different formats that they engage with. I also think it's about as well, you know, being in different places. So it's very hard to get found if you have a podcast and you're only putting the podcast out on your host and then going out to all the apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music Now, and all the different places. If you were only doing that and you were just hoping that people would find you by happening to search for a keyword on Apple Podcasts and find your podcast or just happen to find your podcast on your website, well, it's not really going to work like that. You've got to put your content, you've got to market your episodes and put your content out in more than just those places. So again, when you repurpose, it's about being efficient with the marketing and promotion of your show by instead of just coming up with a completely separate marketing content for your show, actually repurpose the show and repurpose the content. So if you, you know, you may, people will more likely find you in your bite-sized format before they migrate to your long form format. So if you're putting your bite-sized content onto, let's just say the social media platforms, then that, you know, hopefully through effectively marketing promotion and getting found through a short snippet of some audio or a short video teaser on social, and maybe they start to follow you and start to enjoy those shorter teasers and snippets until one day they decide, you know what, I actually want to listen to that whole episode. I want to hear more of that conversation. And then they'll migrate over to the longer form. So in the other, most people will find you probably on their mobile device, and most people will find you in some kind of short, snackable, quick piece of content, as opposed to a person happening to find you with a 30-minute podcast episode on your website that they listen to in full. You know, it's the kind of that's a big hope. More likely to find you, but sat on the phone and you find it, an image, a graphic, something like that. So there's that. And then also, I think, I've talked a lot about social, but I don't like to neglect search as well. So we all search, don't we, as well? It's not just about social, but we will always go to Google or other search apps. We'll all to find the answer to anything, won't we? And so I do think that when you're creating content and you're not repurposing into content that's going to help you get found by the search engines, that's also a big missed opportunity. So that's why we like to recommend repurposing podcast episodes, not just into short form show notes that explain the episode, which is brilliant for a person to entice a person to listen, but also into more longer form SEO focused articles and blog posts that will rank against the keywords that an ideal listener for that episode would be looking for on the search engines, so that you can find people through search as well. So you're expanding the reach of your audience, and you've been really smart in terms of not just going and creating a blog post on something separate, but creating content based on something that you've already put hard work and time into, and just trying to realize that through a combination of short, snackable content on the social media platforms through to the thing we all do every day, which is Google things, you're more likely to expand your audience and just expand your message, and then communicate with people in the way that they prefer to be communicated with.
Yeah, and I think about it, you know, there was that analogy of the trees, but also each episode is essentially kind of a mini funnel, right, where people are discovering it out in the world and kind of working their way back down to that source content that's you know, more valuable for them to engage with. So I love that from a marketing perspective, from an audience engagement perspective, but also you're kind of blowing my mind in real time here with much has been said about discoverability being broken or it's fine depending on who you're listening to. So it never really occurred to me until just now when you were breaking that down for us, and is that you don't really need to rely on the discoverability within the podcast apps. Of course you want to optimize for that, but because there are these very robust and mature and awesome discoverability features within social media and all of these other different channels, whether that's Instagram or YouTube or wherever, you're kind of maximizing your discoverability at the same time and saying, well, podcasting discoverability is kind of evolving and being improved by different platforms and apps, but you can supplement that heavily by much more mature discoverability engines and recommendation engines on, let's say, YouTube or Instagram. So I don't know if that's a question, but I think that that's a pretty profound insight that maybe we don't need to worry too much about discoverability, because it's just podcasting is part of the web, and web has discoverability figured out through search or through recommendations on the Discover tab of Instagram, right? So I think that that's a unique way to look at it that kind of removes a lot of the worry when it comes to podcasting and creating long form content and content marketing in general.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, because there's only really certain types of people, I think, that go to a podcast app itself to search the podcast app to find a podcast on a topic that they want to look for. I mean, firstly, you have to be one of those podcast listener. So that's a certain number of people that just would never think to go to a podcast app to find content on what they look for. And I even think, talking from my own personal experience, that I enjoy listening to podcasts. And obviously I have a podcast, but I enjoy listening to podcasts. And I can't think of a time though where I've honestly used the search features in Spotify or Apple Podcasts, because when I go to them, I know what podcast I want to listen to because, well, it's either ones I've already listened to or I've seen it mentioned somewhere else. Oh, you know, like the Jordan Harbinger show or something, I must go and listen to that. But I wouldn't have found it on the app itself. And I know there are people who do that, but I don't. I listen to podcasts, but I don't discover them through the apps.
Same here.
Don't even ever have that page open that shows like Discover or podcast you may listen to, because the only page I ever have open is my shows, and I only add shows I want to listen to. So I think sometimes you just have to look at your own behaviors, don't you, and think, well, I wouldn't, like, if I was only doing that, then I wouldn't even find my own show. I think it's just important to not have all your eggs in one basket.
To me, what I'm hearing, Amy, is just a really good breakdown on, you're helping content creators build relationships with their current and hopefully new audience members. You're hopefully helping them bring in new members into their ecosystem. And that's something that we're really excited about here at Squadcast. We're starting to release content on a much more regular cadence, offering like just much more content stuff. Just, you know, we've been good about the podcast, but we'll be adding video, we'll be adding like downloadable resources, all tons of stuff that we're excited about. But what's realistic for our expectations, even though we, you know, are really excited about having all this content out there? What's like a realistic expectation of how well this content will perform? Because my understanding is it's a bit of a long game, that SEO, search engine optimization, that's a bit of a long game. And even having a podcast or having video and blogs and all that stuff does certainly hopefully stack upon each other and builds your brand and your voice, so to speak. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be overnight. Is that what kind of expectations should we set for ourselves and perhaps the rest of the podcast community listening?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think when you embark on content marketing, you are embarking on a marketing approach that is not a real kind of fast track. And there's time and effort that you put into it. And it takes time to build an audience and grow that audience in the podcast listeners, as well as in the followers on different platforms and wherever you focus in. It's definitely not a kind of quick fix or something that, you know, you can expect to see very, very quick results. And, you know, in comparison to putting ad spend on like Google AdWords and things like that, where, you are just either it works or it doesn't work. You get the clicks or you don't get the clicks and that kind of thing. Or Facebook, Instagram ads, where you're putting the money on it. It's a longer play for sure. Although, you know, I think the more that you invest in the promotion and the pushing it out there, but it still takes time for people to start consuming your content, and takes time to migrate people from an occasional consumer to more of an avid consumer, and then a bigger fan, and hopefully a kind of super fan. And I think that you know, it's kind of hard to answer that question, because obviously there's a big kind of quality play. I mean, you guys put really good quality content out there, but I think there's a good quality play.
Well, thank you.
And I think that you need to, and then you have to be responsive to, I think it's putting out quality content and then making sure that you aren't being robotic in your approach and your strategy. And just because you decided to do it one way, if you're feeling that people are engaging way more with certain types of content and not with others, then start going all in on that and stop doing the content that doesn't seem to be going down so well. So I think it's a long play with your eyes wide open and an ability to be flexible in your strategy and your approach. Just, I often say that you should treat your content like a startup. So you should create content with repurposing in mind to begin with. So you shouldn't repurpose your content and then think, oh, I wonder, you shouldn't create it and then think, I wonder what I should repurpose it into. In fact, you should know before you're going to create content what you're going to repurpose it into, because if you do that, you'll create with repurposing in mind and it will be easier to repurpose. You may format a show slightly differently because you'll segment it in such a way and you'll repurpose certain segments of the show. Like that'll be the 3-minute bit that we'll always pull out and put on Instagram. And we'll have a killer question every week that will always be a tweet or something like that. So firstly, don't make it an afterthought and create content with repurposing in mind in a same way that you wouldn't just start a business without doing some financial projections and having a plan and a roadmap where you want to go. But then in the same way as being a startup, you also have to be malleable. You have to be very versatile. You have to be willing to change and adapt very quickly. And that's the only way often startups can beat big, large incumbent organ businesses because they can't move very quickly, whereas you can. So you need to be like that with your content. You need to have your plan in mind of how you're going to repurpose, but don't be completely set to it and look at how people are responding, how people are engaging, and start to change your plans. And also take opportunities as they come along with your content as well. So if you get given an opportunity to repurpose in a certain way, go ahead and do that, whether that's turning, 10 blog posts into a short ebook. So other ways of repurposing, not just one episode, but now bringing content together or whatever that may be, like turning lots of different snippets from a podcast episode into one big like epic anniversary episode or that kind of thing. So looking at breaking it down, looking at building it up, but just be willing to change and respond differently. And I guess in terms of setting expectations for the audience, I can only really say from my own personal experience that, and maybe people don't want to hear this, but it was definitely more about the 1 year point, so 52 episodes in, where I really felt like more people were getting in touch with me about the podcast, more people were, responding, like things started to take off a bit around the 1 year point. And it was almost exactly a year on, like the second year point, where I thought even more so, like, wow, even more things are happening. And for me, as a business, creating content for content marketing perspective to grow the business, what that means in terms of taking off for me and my intentions, it was kind of around being asked to go on more podcasts, like really, ones that I would have always wanted to get asked to go on, getting asked to speak on stages all over the place. And it was quite often because people had seen me through the content and the repurposing that we did and things like that, being invited to collaborate with different businesses, more clients coming our way. And so, as a business, I think it kind of takes time and patience. And even if it is 1 or 2 years, but you have to just have faith in it, because I can't believe even now people who will get in touch with me who came across us so long ago and have just become kind of super fans waiting for that moment to finally hit that email or send that message. So you don't know who's out there and who's listening. You just have to have faith as well. Not necessarily blind faith, but I think in the world of podcasting at the start, if you're just starting out, it is a little bit of a blind faith, isn't it? You just have to have quality in your convictions and the quality that you're putting out as well.
So much of what you're saying now, I think longtime listeners it's music to our ears, at least. We say so many things are so similarly. I love that you say your content marketing strategy is similar to a startup. We say starting a podcast and operating a podcast is similar to starting a startup. And then also one of the big themes that we try to reiterate and tell podcasters is that, yes, it's great to come into podcasting or any type of content creation medium with full of passion. Like that's obviously very necessary. And that's why I love working with podcasters every day. But it does reward persistence, consistency. We've seen time and time again that after the 1 year mark, maybe 2-3 years even, that was certainly true for Squadcast, the company. After 2 or 3 years was when the magic really started to happen. So Amy, if I am a podcaster or content creator and I haven't found out about 10X yet, what kind of problems am I experiencing and what am I going through before I need to take that next step and book a call with you? What kind of problems am I encountering? So, what am I looking for?
So probably looking at spending a bit too much time on content. So at Content to Next, we generally work with people who are business owners or people in businesses who are doing the marketing side of things. So from a business owner perspective, spending maybe a little bit too much time on content yourself as opposed to running, you know, other aspects of your business that you should be running, but with a real strong passion for the fact that content marketing does work, but what aspects should you be doing and what aspects should other people be doing? So I think maybe spending too much time, being on a hamster wheel of creating lots and lots of new content, but probably feeling a little bit frustration that not enough is being made out of and consumed from each individual one before you're on, you know, the hamster wheel of the next piece of content as well.
Like content burnout, something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, content burnout, I think, and just an overall frustration of not being on enough other platforms, not putting enough content out in different places, but not really knowing what to and how. So that FOMO, platform FOMO. And also, I would say that, like, maybe a feeling as well of that other people, your competitors, are creating more content or creating more quality content, or your peers are starting to rise up above you and appearing more as leaders and authorities, and you've got everything in your head and all that, all those messages to get out there, and somewhat of a frustration that you want to rise up and be ahead of your peers and ahead of your competition, and you've got it all in there, all the content, but it's not doing what you need it to be doing, or you don't have enough time. But you know that if you could just get an hour of your ideas out once a week, that would be enough to fuel enough content for you to be beating your peers and your competitors and getting on all those platforms and getting found. So I think, you know, that's the key problem that we see, that people come to us, that they just really, really need help and they need that to be solved for them.
Yeah, that's certainly how we've experienced that. So I think you're that makes perfect sense, and also is a strong catalyst for looking at improving the efficiency. And, you know, we talk a lot about quality content here on the podcast and at Squadcast, but I've heard you mention that term a few different times, and also I noticed it in a lot of the content that you produce for your brand. And, you know, to the creator that's listening to this, there may be some sort of wonder or suspicion, like, okay, well, if I work with a firm like yours, if I work with a team like yours, I suspect that the quality may go down because now I'm not able to kind of micromanage it, right? I'm not able to put love into every pixel and, you know, every waveform and that sort of thing. But I think there's a flip side argument there where the quality can actually go up because of that content burnout, where your quality may be going down just because you're trying to be all things everywhere without being kind of efficient and thinking about it holistically and setting yourself up for success like you've been discussing. So I think there's a real argument there that the quality will go up, especially working with professionals like yourself. So how do you think about quality when it comes to the customers that, you know, the creators that you're working with in podcasting or video or any of these avenues?
Yeah, I mean, so quality is like everything to us. It's kind of the top of our core values. Whenever anyone joins and we go through core values, you know, innovation and creativity and quality, and then providing a really slick and seamless service are our core values and what we stand by. And so for us, we're saving time for our clients by they create one piece of content and then we take it from there, and it should be slick. There should be no feeling of anything beyond you provide it to us and that's it. And then I guess the quality is that we are, the way we operate is we're operating as an extension to our clients' businesses. So, and I don't want to sound like a sales pitch here, but, you know, we spend 3 weeks just onboarding clients where we get deep into the brand and everything about them to operate as an outsourced content team for them. So quality is really important. Every client, it has to seem as though they created this content. It has to look on brand. It needs to sound the right style and tone. as well as the aesthetic and everything like that. So it's a massive, massive thing. And I don't ever take for granted how much a client gives to us, you know, from the point of view of not just writing and creating and, you know, producing content for them in their brand, in their style and their tone, but also publishing it all out to, you know, to be going on people's websites, YouTube channels, podcast host, social media and things like that. It's a big leap. But people do trust us, and it does work, and you know, and then we've grown based on our reputation really, because it really does work. But it's just huge. We have so many quality checks internally as a team before things go out. And if our kind of mantra is, if we wouldn't accept that, I don't know, that little blip or that misaligned image or that anything, then we don't accept it for our clients too. It's as simple as that, and we'll go back and change it. But it's a really good point. I think if somebody comes to us who has been trying to do all of it, so a business owner who's been trying to also create their own graphics and audiograms and produce their own podcasts and things like that, but their business is, I'm just going to make it up, but they're a mindset coach or something like that, or whatever it may be, then you're not a graphic designer, you're not a podcast editor, you're not a video editor, you're not a copywriter. So I feel in that case, when they let go, and then my team are graphic designers, podcast editors, but with copywriters and things like that, when you let go and let a professional actually do it, then usually that is the point at which they will just say, oh wow, okay, you know, I was doing a good job, but wow, okay, this is somebody who is their profession to do all of this now. So it's a bit more of a relief that it's handed over. And then sometimes it's a bigger business, a bigger organization, like we've been working with Wix and TechSmith and bigger companies that have marketing departments, but they don't have a podcast department, and the marketing team don't necessarily know too much about podcasting or about repurposing podcasts.
Yeah, you're the experts in that.
Exactly, yeah. So in that case, you know, bigger businesses are all too familiar as well with outsourcing. They'll outsource their HR, they'll outsource their IT development, they'll outsource finance functions and things like that. So to outsource for a niche specialism of creativity, you know, marketing teams obviously can do loads, but what we do is really quite niche. And I feel in that regard, it's often when they're dipping their toe into the world of podcasting, in that case they might come to us and say, we're just going to launch a 12 episode season as our first foray into podcasting. So they're not going to go and hire in-house all these different skill sets for a foray into podcasting, a first season, to see if it's going to work. They're more likely to outsource the skill set and see if it works. So in that regard as well, it just really makes sense to leave it to somebody rather than manage it in-house.
And being on brand, I mean, for those companies, for any company, right, is critical. So that was something that, you know, I think, again, has blown my mind with a different, you know, mindset shift, as that you're providing this real value for people, where it may look like, you know, the quality would potentially go down, but it's the exact opposite, because you're working with professionals that are making up this super team that you don't necessarily have for each and every podcast episode that you're producing. So I really, you know, appreciate that, and your emphasis on quality and branding are two things very near and dear to my heart and our heart at Squadcast. So I think you're making a tremendous contribution to really solidifying podcasting as a serious medium, where people are getting real value to their listeners and their audience, and businesses are able to grow. I think the rubber really hits the road when it comes to the work that you're doing and the value that you're bringing to each individual customer that you're working with, but just podcasting writ large with this approach that you're out here, you know, advocating and pioneering, frankly. So just wanted to take this moment to really applaud the work that you're doing, and I think it is contributing to a better podcasting ecosystem, and, you know, solidifying the medium like we love to explore here on this show. So thank you, Amy, for the work that you're doing in podcasting.
No, thank you. And when you said that we love to explore on this show, you should also say that we do as well in the industry as well, because that is exactly what you guys do as well. You know, Scodcast is so cool, and it's so great to see, you know, what it's become as well. I think we met a couple of years ago, didn't we? And it's just awesome to see what it's become and how much it's evolved. And, you know, many of our clients use it. You got a big shout out in my book, and we always recommend you guys as well. So, thank you and thank you back to you as well.
it's a symbiotic relationship. That's what I love about the podcast community is it's very collaborative, and we get to, you know, have the good fortune of working with very very forward thinking people like yourself. So we are a bit sad to have to wrap up with you here, Amy. I think this is going to be, you know, fantastic ongoing conversation moving into the future. But for our listeners to today's episode, who are interested in improving the efficiency and quality of their content strategy to really maximize the reach for their audience, like your service provides, where can people best reach you?
I think it would be best to direct people to the Content 10X website, so content10x.com. So that's content10x.com, yeah, and all the links to social media and things like that are over there as well. So that would be the best place.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us today, Amy.
Thanks so much. It's been great, guys. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Between Two Mics with Zach and Rock from Squadcast.
The best way to record remote podcast interviews like today's in studio quality.
Visit bit.ly/squadpod to check out our resources page, where you can download your free remote interview checklist.